We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Bite.
This is The First 50, a podcast celebrating the human stories behind the first 50 years of women's athletics at Princeton. Here are your hosts, Ford Family Director of Athletics, Molly Marcuse-Amon, and Jerry Price.
Hi, everyone. I'm Molly Marcuse-Amon, the Ford Family Director of Athletics at Princeton, and I'd like to welcome you to the first episode in 2021 of The First 50, our podcast series that we had so much fun with before the holidays. It's great to be back again as we celebrate the first 50 years of women's athletics at Princeton and the women who built a model intercollegiate athletic program. This series is about the power of athletics in transforming lives and building leaders. These are the human stories behind our great women's athletic history. As always, I'm joined on these podcasts by Princeton's athletic historian, Jerry Price, who is also currently working on a book on the first 50 years of women's athletic history. Our podcast and Jerry's books are just a part of this great anniversary, which we had originally hoped would include many in-person celebrations, but will still be a phenomenal tribute to all of our great women athletes with speaker series events, social media content, and a ton of information on our webpage. So Jerry, I am so excited about our podcast today. You know, I love doing this because I love talking to great women. But today we get to speak with the great Jackie Jackson, class of 78, and the amazing Heidi Nolte, class of 79, both hugely impactful members of our women's basketball community. Women's basketball at Princeton, as you know better than most, has been just one of our most heralded and celebrated programs. And these two women play a unique role in our program's history and are still helping shape the future of the program today. So, you know, you excited as I am, Jerry?
Oh, absolutely. I think all of the programs have great stories to tell. But I think in the case of women's basketball, it's what I think is great is the success the women's basketball program has had in the last 10 years, 11, 12 years, where it's become a legitimate national top 25 regular Ivy League champion, NCAA tournament participant, coming off a 26-1 season. I think the most amazing thing that about the current women's basketball program is the way that it has crossed over and really embraced male fans. And I think they've bought into the way the team plays, the beauty of the game, the athletic nature of the women's team, and of course the success. And I think it's amazing when you look at where the team is now, and you see the effort that has been made to include the women who started the program in the 70s. Basketball was one of the original six women's sports at Princeton in the first year, 71-72. And where you see where the program started and the effort that went into building it into what, you know, the foothold that was made originally and then what it's become, I just think it's extraordinary. And also the way that that generation of women has been embraced by the current generation of women, and just to see them at alumni events and games and Jadwin and all that has just been amazing. So yeah, we're really fortunate today to have Heidi and Jackie with us.
Yeah, and the great connections, and we're going to get into some of those connections between the 70s generation and the current team. And you know, Heidi, you guys have both played a tremendous role in that connection, so we're really excited about that. But welcome to both of you to our podcast today.
Yeah, thank you very much, Motley and Jerry. It's great to have been asked to join. It's an honor. All I can say is that I think all of us from the 70s have huge swag envy of what today's players get. So whenever they send us something, we're just thrilled to wear it and show off the Princeton colors in whatever part of the country we're in.
Well, awesome, Heidi. I'm going to have to know that you care about that a little more now. So you're going to be getting some good swag from me, and you too, Jackie.
Well, that sounds good. I would love it. Yeah, I'm very happy to be on this. I've enjoyed reconnecting with Princeton, and it really was because of my connection with the basketball team that kind of had me start coming back about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, you guys know, I've said this before, you guys know how to run an alumni day. It's like the long line on the middle of the basketball court when you guys all line up there. And we do it usually by sort of class year. And the 70s are always extremely well represented, thanks to you guys. So love having you back and can't wait to do that again. But let's start with sort of, why don't each of you, and I'll start with you first, Heidi. Why don't you set the stage and describe kind of what life was like on campus during your 4 years, and you know, you can get into the idea of what it was like being a female basketball player at that time.
Yeah, so I think for the most part, and I actually don't know this about Jackie, but I think most of us were not recruited. There was a little ad that was about a half inch high that ran in the Daily Princetonian that said tryouts will be at Dillon Gym on such and such a date, show up. And that was kind of how most of us met each other, I think, was by showing up for those tryouts. I thought a lot about sort of way back then, and it is a fair number of years ago. I think we were all just sort of trying to figure it out because women's athletics were so new. We weren't maybe warmly embraced by the entire community. We had to figure out how to go to our practices at Jadwin and still be in time for Commons dinner at the far end of the campus, which usually involved sort of a crazy sprint up the hill to get there before the doors closed at 7:15. So there wasn't a lot of accommodation, I would say, for us as women's athletes. We were fortunate to have great talent with Jackie, with Maggie, Claire Beth. So we had a lot of success on the court. And I think that maybe mitigated some of the circumstances that we were playing under. But I think in the long term, looking back, it certainly gave me lessons about leadership, teamwork, how to deal with difficult circumstances and still find enjoyment in what we were doing.
Yeah, awesome. We're going to get into that because, Heidi, you've had a remarkable career, and we're going to get into some of the leadership lessons learned. And but maybe go to you, Jackie. You know, so what was it like for you being on campus during your 4 years?
Oh, when I arrived at Princeton, you know, I love basketball, so I had definitely planned to try out for the team. And the way I found out even about the details of it, I think freshman week, I went down to Dillon Gym just to shoot around and happened to bump into Laura Dillon, I think was her maiden name, who was on the team the year before. And so it was really through her that I got the connection of finding out when there were going to be practices and that type of thing. But yeah, kind of like Heidi was saying, I definitely remember the hike from the far bottom of the campus up to the cafeteria for our meals every night. But I think with all of us, we just loved the sport so much. I was just happy to be able to play. And so, you know, adjusted to whatever the circumstances were. My senior year of high school is when they passed Title IX. So, you know, we went from having one sport in high school to having different options. So I was just grateful to be able to participate that during my college career as well.
Awesome. So let's go back just a little bit from that position. Heidi, had you played a lot of basketball before coming to Princeton, or, you know, give us some of your kind of youth sports background leading to and your decision to choose Princeton?
Yeah, so I was actually much more of a swimmer. I started swimming. We had a lady that lived in our apartment complex. So at like 2 years old, she taught me how to swim. And from there, my parents joined a swim and tennis club, and I swam competitively in grammar school and then in the private school I went to in Summit. There wasn't a lot of athletic teams. And then we moved up to Connecticut, and my first year was ninth grade. There were no athletic teams. I tried out for basketball my first year of high school. I was cut, much to my dismay. And then there was a new coach. So my extent of basketball experience was only 11th and 12th grade. So it was pretty limited, but I, much like Jackie said, I loved it. I played field hockey, I played softball, but basketball was really the sport that I had the highest affinity for. When I was applying for colleges, Princeton was at the top of my list. I think mostly just because we had gone to the campus when I was younger. I saw the campus, I fell in love with the campus. I did also apply, one of the schools I applied to was University of Connecticut, and this was in the pre-Geno days. I got a full academic scholarship there, and my father was a little disappointed that I didn't take the free ride but he was happy that I decided to go to Princeton. So, you know, we don't have all the tools that the kids have today to find out this information. You got that college book, I think it was Barron's or something, you know, that had a little write-up about each university. And that was, other than knowing somebody who had gone to a school, you didn't have a lot of sources of information. So we really made our decisions on more gut feel than knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. It's remarkable too that, you know, and Jackie, I'd love to hear your story, because it sounded like you just showed up and tried out for the team. And then, you know, you had quite a bit of success while you were here. You know, you're still in the record books and still one of the all-time greats in terms of the accomplishments. Talk to us about how, you know, what your experience was prior to Princeton.
I was a tomboy growing up. I had two older brothers, but Mike, who is 18 months older than me, basically, I just played with him and with his friends. So I grew up playing basketball and football, and then the community softball league. But in school, I started playing basketball in junior high. So from, I guess we had a team in ninth grade. So I played basketball ninth through 12th grade. And then when I got to Princeton, continued it there. I also did track in high school, because that's one of the ones they started my senior year. But I felt like at Princeton, probably one sport was all I could handle along with the academics. So I stuck with basketball.
Yeah. And did you know how good you were? I mean, when you got on campus, obviously you were an amazing player and, you know, won lots of awards and was a leader on the team. Did you sort of know, hey, I'm going to go in there and kick some butt as I get into basketball?
No, I wouldn't say I was thinking that. Coming from a small rural town in Pennsylvania, and again, this was the early 70s, you know, I didn't have really any guidance as far as my athletics, the different schools I was applying to or anything. So I didn't really have anything to compare myself to other than, you know, my teammates on my team and the other teams we played against. So I really didn't know. I just knew I was going to try out for it.
Awesome.
So one thing, Molly, you mentioned Jackie's still in the record books. There's only three players in program history who've averaged 14.5 points, 7.5 rebounds or better in their career. There's three of them. Jackie's one. The other two are Naveen Rashid and Bella Allery. And when you're mentioned in company like that, that's extraordinary. Your impact that you know from the 70s, that's really stood up and lasted. And to be in that kind of company is amazing. And then just one other thing is, the first 3 years of the women's basketball program played 7, 10, and 11 games. There was no Ivy League schedule. Jackie, for your first year, your freshman year, and then Heidi for your years after that, there was an Ivy League tournament. Princeton won the first 4 of those Ivy League tournaments. But what I really wanted to ask you about is the first Ivy League tournament was, it was a round robin among all of the teams that was held in Princeton, and you played 5 games in 2 days. What are your memories of that?
It was pretty tiring. Yeah, I remember we just basically that weekend lived at Jadwin Gym and just played, kind of had the playoffs. But again, it was, I love basketball, and it was kind of the only format that I was familiar with. Definitely, I'm glad that they've gone to something a little bit different now that's much more realistic and I think manageable for the players.
I read in the Daily Princetonian story from the first Ivy basketball tournament that you were supposed to play 3 games the first day and 2 games the second day, but they moved the 3rd game of the first day back to the second day because nobody had taken into account the idea that people needed to eat. And so they canceled the last game so everybody can go out and get something to eat. Do you remember that at all?
I don't remember that. That was 45 years ago almost. So that part I've blanked out.
Now we spend, you know, countless hours talking about exactly what time the first game of the Ivy League basketball tournament will start and what the recovery will look like. And, you know, literally, I'm not talking like, 5 minutes of a conversation of what time the women's game should start, what time the men's game starts, how do we make it equitable, how do we make sure that everyone recovers exactly at the right time. And you guys were going to play 4 games in 1 day. So, Heidi, you were going to jump in there.
Yeah, I was just going to add to Jerry's comments about Jackie's career. And as I recall, Jackie was injured one of those years, too, so missed a number of games. So looking at, you know, her accomplishments in light of that is even better. And I would say, based on all of the people that I've observed, she was one of the most elegant basketball players that we had. She was just smooth and everything looked like it came very easy to her.
Awesome. So Heidi, you mentioned a little bit about sort of how welcoming people were and sort of what it felt like. Did you identify as a female athlete at that time? Did you think of yourself, you know, truly as I'm a Princeton athlete? And how did you kind of handle the relation? How were the relationships with the men's team? And maybe talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I've always seen myself as being an athlete. I think, we probably, some of us had experiences in high school that were actually a little bit advanced from when we got to Princeton in terms of, you know, some of us in terms of coaches that we had or programs that were in existence were even ahead of where Princeton was at the point where we got there. And you know, Pete was not a big supporter of ours, and he knows that. And he and I had sort of kissed and made up since then at one of the golf outings. But he really didn't see that women needed to share his basketball court. We had friends. I was good friends with a few of the guys on the men's team. But I think it was frowned upon for them to acknowledge the women's team, at least in view of the coaching staff. So it was, you know, it was a bit awkward. And it was a small community. I think we, you know, 4 of us roomed together as sophomores because, you know, it just seemed like we were 4 sophomores who would come, you know, as freshmen. So it seemed like a sort of a natural thing to do.
And like you said, you know, Coach Carrill is around all the time and he's awesome. And, you know, it sounds like you guys have kind of had good conversations and, you know, you're all such big supporters of Princeton basketball in general at this time. So that's always fun, you know, to be able to have that renewed relationship at this point.
Absolutely.
Great. Jackie, what about you? Sort of how did you feel? And you were, we've been sort of digging through the history and we are pretty confident that you were the first Black female captain at Princeton. And, you know, sort of what was that like, you know, at that time? And sort of how did you view your role and, you know, your relationship with the men's team and just with the broader community?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. I didn't even realize that until Jerry mentioned it to me when he was interviewing me a couple of months ago, as far as being the first female Black captain. But like Heidi, I had some friends on the men's team that were very supportive of us. And then, you know, other friends also that would come to the games and things. I knew that, you know, the established leadership wasn't real supportive. And, you know, in some ways we got kind of secondhand choices and things. But I think it was the bonding on the team that enabled us, I think, to kind of in the face of that, just do the best we could and enjoy the experience despite, you know, what it was.
I have a funny little anecdote. As I mentioned, as sophomores, Claire Beth, Renee, Mo, and I roomed together. And when we went into room draw at the end of freshman year, we had such a bad number, they had run out of rooms. So we left in May not having a room assignment. And I think they called us or sent us a letter in the mail in August saying, yes, they had found a room for us. And it was on the fourth floor. And we got there and it was a quad on one side and a quad on the other side with a bathroom in the middle. And there were three guys living across the hall from us. And they had designated the bathroom to be a men's bathroom. Well, it turns out one of the guys living across the hall from us was John Rogers. And they were freshmen. There were three guys, we were sophomores. So we thought we should pull rank and we should get that bathroom and shouldn't have to go down a flight of stairs. So we went back to the housing people and they said, no, this is what you have to do. So we sat down with the three guys and we negotiated a sign that went on the bathroom door. So we shared the bathroom with John Rogers and his two roommates.
Awesome. And John Rogers, we know, is part of Princeton basketball royalty and an amazing, amazing guy. And sounds like he was the same back then and very reasonable and accommodating, which is great.
He was a complete basketball nerd. He would walk out of the dorm room with the basketball and he would be dribbling it across campus the whole time.
Awesome. That's what he talks about, you know, how much he just loved it and how that experience really formed so much about his life success. So that's awesome. Jackie, anything else on sort of being a leader, you know, and we're going to get into some leadership, but being a leader of that team during that period and you know, any specific life lessons learned from your being the captain in that era?
Well, I think for me, and probably even during those years, that was true that I'm very much a team player. And so that really has carried through in the work I've done after leaving Princeton and even in any leadership roles I'm in. It's not so much about necessarily trying to promote myself as much as it is, what's the team focus and how can we accomplish that? And, you know, what's best for the group as far as opposed to individuals.
And did you think that just came naturally to you, or were you intentional with kind of your leadership approach of being a team-oriented and team-focused leader?
I think more it came naturally, kind of fits my personality. And so it made it easy to just slide into that with athletics also.
Awesome. Well, maybe that's a good transition point for us to kind of talk about both of your lives after Princeton. I know you both had really successful careers and have done really impactful things since graduating from Princeton. And so let's dive into that a little bit. Heidi, talk about your career and then weave in some of those life lessons that you started talking about, you know, that you learned through basketball or through playing sports.
Sure. So 1979 was sort of a tough economic year. The job market was really pretty bad. And Claire Beth and I were actually drafted to play in the, I think it was called Professional Women's Basketball League, which was like a precursor to the WNBA. It lasted all of about 3 years. And then there was a big vacuum where there was no professional basketball. We both opted not to, pursue that. But I ended up starting with a really small entrepreneurial medical device company that grew into kind of a big company. And even with my history degree, it was actually, they were looking for people to be trainees in their IT program, because there weren't many colleges that were training people in sort of business information technology. And it ended up being, you know, for completely sort of accidental reasons, it ended up slotting me into something that I really enjoyed doing. So I've been in information technology, largely in medical devices and pharma, for my entire working career. I've worked for different types of companies, you know, sort of national companies, international, global companies. And, you know, as I rose into leadership positions, much more of what I was doing was thinking about team dynamics. How could I build effective teams? How could I work with the business partners that we were supporting with technology solutions? And I've always felt that when I had people in my teams who had participated in athletics, we tended to do better, because they were people who understood the dynamics of how teamwork could be optimized. And you could sort of tell when you had people who hadn't been in that type of a culture. So I felt it influenced me. It influenced how I thought about who I was adding into my teams, how you could incorporate diverse thinking into your teams and make your teams better because of that diversity, as opposed to having everybody look like me on my team, which, you know, I think is something that you refine over the years and become better at.
Awesome. Well, what, you know, Heidi, listen, I think you're a great leader, and you've helped us so much as the vice president of the Friends of Basketball. And I know you helped me in my role as a mentor and as a friend. What was your leadership style? I know you recently retired. What was your leadership style throughout your career? How would your employees describe you as a leader?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely, hopefully it got better over time. I think I made all the rookie mistakes that you make when you're a young leader, but I was fortunate that I had a boss early in my career who put me in leadership positions. So I was able to sort of start thinking about teams and how teams worked. I think generally the feedback from people was that I was tough but fair. So I could hold a high standard, but I didn't do it in a way that was unfair to people. And if you're in information technology in a large company, you're a service provider to internal customers. And those customers are always very demanding, and IT is never good enough. So you have to hold yourself and your teams to high standards, but you also have to be willing to push back when people are unreasonable, and you have to be able to defend your teams if the business isn't being fair in terms of how they're working with you, right? So technology is a give and take. You need to understand what the business is doing. The business has to articulate what their requirements are, and you need to marry those two pieces together in terms of coming up with a solution. So that was, you know, that was kind of how I built up my career. And I was at, you know, in the last probably 10 years, I worked for a couple of global companies, truly global in the sense that we had people on our teams from all over the world. So, you know, I could have a team where I had somebody from Mexico, Brazil, Italy, Switzerland, Australia, China. And that dynamic is real. It can be really, really good, and you can learn a lot, but you can also have it not work, and it can be really destructive.
Well, it sounds like a lot of the lessons that you learned playing basketball at Princeton during the 70s really helped you be able to navigate those complexities throughout your career. So that's awesome. Jackie, maybe turn to you with the same sort of question. I was reading a little bit more about your bio, and it sounds like you did some really interesting service work and work in your career that we'd love to hear about.
Okay, sure. And as Heidi was talking, I was thinking, I think for me, one of the big takeaways from Princeton and just being an athlete, even through high school and then in college, is being on team sports, you learn to work with other people. And all different personalities. And I think that especially served me well in my career. I worked, well, for 26 years, I was with a couple of different Christian nonprofit missions organizations. The ones that I enjoyed the most probably are the last 14 years I did that, was an organization where we would partner with pastors in poorer countries, really helping them with needs in the community. So, and I think of that as teamwork, because it wasn't Americans or, you know, Westerners coming in and saying, here's what you need, now we'll do it. But it was coming in and saying, what do you need? And then we would raise people, team funds to come in and help them with that. So it might be a medical team that would come in and do free clinics. It might be helping them build a church or build a school. Or provide different training type things. But for me, that was a good fit because I really enjoy helping people and working on a team. So it enabled me to do both of those things, as well as to be able to just meet people in a lot of different cultures. I grew up, my dad was in the military, so we traveled quite a bit when I was younger. And I enjoyed being able to continue that experience during my career also.
How many years did you do that?
The last internationally, I did that for about 12 years. I was based in the US, but then would either fly to a place and meet a team there or would lead a team and go with them there.
And are you retired now too, or are you still working, or?
Well, I'm working part-time, but more I'm working, retail for a big computer company.
Awesome.
And enjoy that. I love technology, and I'm an introvert, so I've been surprised at how much I actually enjoy spending so much time with people.
Yeah, that's great. And did you, you know, again, similar to Heidi, when you reflect back again, we talked a little bit about your leadership and you know, what kind of lessons did you bring? You talked a lot about putting team first and the same thing in your career, but were there other specific things that you drew on from your experience as a captain of a Princeton basketball team to help you be successful in your career?
I think one thing, and I don't know that it's something that I was consciously aware of, but kind of in the face of odds, just looking and trying to figure out, okay, what's needed and how can we do this? And not necessarily thinking, well, that's not been done before. That just isn't going to be accepted, but really looking at, well, what are the needs and how can we go about trying to fill those?
So figuring out the game plan, right? So strategizing at the beginning of the week for practice and building up towards that that game at the end of the week. How can you solve problems and find strategies and solutions for winning, whatever winning looks like, whether it's in your job or an actual basketball game. So
right. And being able also to identify the people I worked with, what were their strengths? So how can we maximize those and take advantage of those?
Yeah. Awesome. Well, congratulations. I know you're both still serving in your communities. We were talking before we jumped on the podcast, Heidi, about how you've been helping seniors figure out how to navigate the COVID sites to get their vaccines. And so are you doing a lot of that at this point to service? And I know you're serving Princeton basketball beautifully and helping us in so many ways, but how else are you spending your time these days?
Yeah. So when I retired, in 2015, I think, I had my dad had moved in with me, and he ended up living with me for about 8 years. So, you know, part of my life was around just sort of managing him as he aged and keeping him out of the hospital and places he didn't want to be. But at the same time, I knew I needed to build kind of a world around that. So much like you, I'm a big wannabe golfer. So I try to spend my summers on the golf course, but as you know, we have long winters up here. And what I figured out was that I could do, I could volunteer to do taxes for seniors and low income that would fill up my February and Marches, and then March into April. And then I found out that I could do Medicare counseling for open enrollment. So that kind of took care of October, November into December. And I have to spend December and January studying for my tax certification. And then this past year, because of COVID, our tax group ended up also helping people who normally don't file income taxes and therefore didn't get a stimulus payment just because they're not required to file income taxes. We did economic impact filings so that they were on record with the federal government in order to get the $1,200. And we did that nationwide for a period of about, I think it was 3 or 4 months. And it's just, it gives, you know, I live in a very privileged community up in Fairfield County, but it gives you a more grounded perspective of where a lot of people are at.
Yeah, and that's great. Again, one of our big mantras in athletics is, you know, as obviously with the university, the commitment to service. And, you know, we talk about achieving, serving, and leading. And it sounds like you both have picked up on that same concept in your careers and in your volunteer work to go out and make the world a better place. And you know, we believe that in athletics, we are helping kids, students recognize the importance of that and giving them opportunities to do that and get practice at serving. And you guys are both tremendous examples of people who have done that, you know, post-graduation. So thank you for, you know, leading the way and showing, being role models for our student athletes to see the importance of service once you graduate.
I mean, I think, you know, if I look back on my college days, I don't think it was something we talked about, Jackie. You may have had a different experience, but I think we were pretty focused on like trying to get through our academic requirements, making basketball practice, you know, playing our games, and I don't think we were ever really challenged on these other areas. So I appreciate when Carla includes me on calls with the team. I see what the kids are doing in terms of, you know, greater awareness. And some of it is the fact that the world is more available to them in terms of information. You know, we kind of, I guess we were limited to what we saw on the Daily Princetonian when it got delivered to our room. We didn't have phones, we didn't have Twitter, we didn't have ways of sort of understanding the broader world. But I think it's admirable and fulfilling to see how the current team is stepping up in these areas.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your thoughts on service, Jackie? I know you spent your career serving, and you know, any other things to add in that area?
What I do now in my spare time, I volunteer. I live about a mile from the LGBT Center here in Orlando. And so I started volunteering there about 3 years ago. And so I help by doing HIV testing. So it's been interesting. I've learned a lot that I knew nothing about before volunteering there. But so that's one of the ways I feel like I can really connect with the community in an area that there's a big need. So for me, volunteerism has been a big thing, whether it's this or other areas that I've volunteered in the past. And similar to Heidi, I was actually my mother's caregiver for the last 10 years of her life. I own a duplex, so she lived on one side and I was on the other, which was perfect. But I hadn't realized how much I picked up by helping her in those 10 years that I use now in my job, where we have people coming to the store who are from like the Villages, which is a big retirement community north of here. And so being able to communicate to people in their 70s and 80s about technology in a way they can understand. A lot of that are just things I picked up helping my mother that I didn't even realize.
Yeah, so valuable, particularly these days. And Heidi, you talked about how, you know, we got the Daily Princetonian at the door, but we didn't have access to these things. That was a blessing and a curse, right? I mean, I think probably more of a blessing than anything, right? That we sort of lived in our world and you know, weren't so obsessed with our phones and with technology, and we got to sort of see the world around us a little bit more. So we're trying to push that on our kids too, to sort of enjoy the moments and enjoy the scenery and to live in the moment as opposed to constantly being, you know, connected to those devices. But it's hard for all of us for sure. Let's transition in the last part of this conversation to sort of what you guys think of Princeton basketball now. You know, I think you've both been really connected. You watch games. You know, I've heard you both talk about kind of, wow, this is pretty different than it was when we were players. And maybe give us your thoughts on that. And, you know, Heidi, I'll start with you. You were on the search committee that helped us hire Carla, which we were really grateful for. And you were super, super passionate about it and helpful with us. So maybe talk about that and your role with the Friends Group.
Yeah, I mean, I was sort of absent for most of my working career because I was traveling internationally a lot and life was busy. And, you know, I would read occasionally in the one of my weekly magazines. And then sort of as I was approaching retirement, I started to connect back with the program through Courtney and, you know, started to sort of realize what was being built and the quality of student athletes that we were able to attract. And I thought it was a good opportunity for us as, you know, the senior statespeople of the program to come back and provide some perspective to these kids on where the program had come from. And I remember probably the first time that the first alumni weekend that we had and we did the sort of circle communications with the then current team, and we were telling them some of the stories of, you know, that we had to go to the university store and pick out our uniforms, we bought our own sneakers, we went to PJ's to have a really good, you know, pregame meal that would load us down and make sure that we couldn't jump and run fast. And they kind of looked at us like, A, you got to be kidding us. And B, that must have been like 250 years ago. So, you know, I'm a history major. I think history is important. I think we learn, you know, we shouldn't get mired down in it, but we should appreciate it to understand how we've evolved and where we haven't evolved. So that's kind of my, you know, my enthusiasm, not to mention just the pure excellence of the program over the last couple of, you know, the last 10 years. And I have to say, I feel really bereft without having seen the end of last year and without being able to see the team play this year. And my passion for next year is doubled because I just know it's gonna be great and fun and it's gonna be terrific to see, you know, my classmates or my decade mates and other alumni get back together again, because it's going to be more special.
Awesome. Great. Yeah. No, and like I said, you've been incredible and a great mentor to all of us. Jackie, how about you? Have you followed along and stayed connected? And I read a little bit that you were sort of like, wow, these kids are really good. And they have things that we certainly didn't have back in the day, but shared allegiances around Princeton women's basketball.
Yeah, I could credit Heidi for my reconnection, because she's done a good job of reaching out to a lot of people on our team and of the 70s generation. And when I came back for my 40th, it was really because I was looking forward to reconnecting with some of the women I had played with then. And that's what really got me reconnected with the team, and that I've been able to continue following them and supporting them from a distance. But it is exciting to see just how the program has evolved. And, you know, they're amazing, and what they've accomplished is just very impressive.
So yeah, and the women, the women on the team are great leaders. You know, a number of them are working with us with this Tigers Together initiative that we put forward that is sort of working on sort of diversity, equity, and inclusion across all areas of the department, and specifically focused right now with four task forces working on sort of the Black student athlete experience. You know, we're sort of focused on recruiting, focused on the student experience, focused on mentorship, alumni mentorship, and engagement, and then community action, sort of how we can serve the community and build pipelines. And some of the women's basketball players are just really, they help start the Black Student Athlete Council. They're they're just leading on many fronts on the campus. And they've really been like that for a number of years. I think Courtney did a great job in starting that. And Carla has picked up the mantle and done a phenomenal job. And the kids are just remarkable leaders on campus. And it all really started with you guys. And it's so great, as Jerry said from the beginning, to kind of connect the people who started the program with the kids who are taking it forward. I don't know if you guys want to add anything to that, but I love the leadership of the team, and I love the spirit of the team, both from the alumni perspective and the current student perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I've networked with some of the players on LinkedIn now too, to sort of, establish another way of communications, and just recently sort of went through that process of reaching out to most of the team that I could find on LinkedIn to just say, hey, I'm here, I'm here as a resource. I'm here if you want to chat. It's a very, it's the times are challenging, in especially with the events of, the last couple of weeks. And I know, Carla's working hard to keep the team connected, but also give them a forum to kind of process through all of this, because, the challenges of the pandemic alone were difficult, but then the divisiveness that exists in the country right now is challenging. And I know they've had, good conversations to share perspectives, because there's, a lot of things based on our backgrounds that we don't understand about other people. I've learned that by working in global teams and talking to my colleagues from other parts of the world, that all of a sudden you're like, that's why you do things differently. It's not right or wrong. It's just, culturally it's different, or because of economic circumstances, it's different. I think, I think the more that we can be there as a resource for the teams, if they want to use us, I think it can only be helpful.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I would agree with Heidi. One of the things that really struck me, I think it was 3 years ago when I was there, and we were talking with, I think it was Courtney and the team, and they were talking about how even then they had arranged where each player had not a faculty, but maybe someone that was an administrator at Princeton that was someone they could, another adult they could go to talk about anything. And I just remember thinking how awesome that was, because I know for me going to Princeton, my first time away from home, really just felt on my own and didn't have anybody to go to. I wouldn't have thought to go to my coach on personal things. And so I think it's wonderful that they have these different venues of adults who are interested in their lives that can be a support for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the coaches view themselves 100% as educators, mentors, as well as, obviously coaches of the specific sport. But then we do have something that we call the team around the team. And, we try to bring other people into the team dynamic to be able to support the student athletes. And I know the student athletes are grateful for that mentorship and that support from lots of different areas, not just their coaches, who are phenomenal, but the faculty fellows that you mentioned, Jackie, and the performance team and the alums. And so it's a really unbelievable community and unbelievable opportunity for kids to learn from those around them. So Jerry's telling me that, again, I could ask you guys questions all day long, but Jerry's telling me we're up against our time frame here. So I'll end with the question that I like to ask all the women on our podcast. What do you think it is about athletics that, really for women in particular, that really sort of transform lives and impact them moving forward, and if, your advice to parents in terms of putting their kids into sports, particularly their young girls into sports, what is the value of that? And I'll start with Heidi.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, it just puts you in situations where you learn about teamwork and you learn about leadership, and it doesn't matter what your role is, you can be coming off the bench and you can still contribute as a leader. And I think that's, maybe everybody sees initially that it's only the superstars that are the leaders, but that may be in terms of points scored, but it doesn't mean that you can't lead from another perspective, and finding kind of your role in that and finding your voice in that is so important as you get older, you potentially go into the, you know, the business world or the professional world. I think for me, it was hugely beneficial. Very honestly, when I applied for my second job, which was with a commercial printing company, I had to interview with the CEO, and my boss, who was the CFO at the time, said to me, the CEO knows nothing about technology. He doesn't understand why we have to invest in it, but you need to go meet with him and do the interview. So I sat down and did the interview, and he asked me some questions about my background. I said, you know, I had played XYZ athletics, I had gone to Princeton, and the guy was like, great, you're hired. And, you know, that was kind of a sign of the times. So that was in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s. But I think, especially, you know, and we still face this situation where most CEOs are male, white. It gives you a little bit more, I felt like I had, you know, the ability to have more presence, more standing, more confidence, to be able to be in those difficult meetings and say the things that needed to be said, as opposed to what people might want to hear said.
Yeah, awesome, well said. Jackie, how about you?
Well, I think, you know, team sports teach you so many things beyond just the athletic part of it. I mean, you, even as younger kids, you learn hard work, you learn time management, you learn how to work with others. And you get to experience not always winning, not always being the victor, because, and that's important too, to learn how to experience that and to handle that well. So I think I would definitely encourage people with kids, because I think the payoff is so great going forward in their lives.
Absolutely. Learning how to fail is not easy to do. And being able to pick yourself back up and move to the next game. And as you talked about, Jackie, sort of put the next strategy together to solve problems, just like you did in your career. So great insight, and really love your stories. Thank you for everything that you did in the past and are doing currently to continue to move Princeton women's basketball and Princeton basketball in general. I know the relationship that Heidi, you have with Coach Henderson is phenomenal. And the relationship, you know, between the men's and the women's program is terrific. And, you know, you are very supportive of the men's program and the women's program and of Coach Henderson and Coach Berube. And that's really important for our program moving forward. And really just a great gratitude to you for doing that. And Jackie, great gratitude for you for all you've done. And Jerry, I'll turn it to you. I didn't let you in. I was too excited about this conversation. but I'll leave you the last word.
Well, you covered all the questions I would have asked anyway. So Heidi and Jackie, thank you so much for being with us. We really enjoyed having you. And to everybody listening, we appreciate that you have enjoyed these podcasts as much as we've enjoyed bringing them to you. So for Heidi Nolte and Jackie Jackson, and for Ford Family Director of Athletics, Molly Marcuse-Simon, I'm Jerry Price. Thank you for being with us here on the First 50 podcast, and thank you for your continued support of Princeton Athletics.
You've been listening to The First 50, a podcast celebrating the human stories behind the first 50 years of women's athletics at Princeton. We invite you to visit goprincetontigers.com/50years to submit your favorite memories and for more great content, including photos, feature stories, book excerpts, and the complete First 50 podcast series.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.